Okay, so today is Tuesday, August 27th. We're going to work on organic compounds today. I'm actually going to take you back to the beginning, and we're going to start with page 19. I just want to remind you where we're headed with this stuff. We're going to work through the organic compounds today. On Thursday, we're going to work on basic cell information. We're going to hit two topics here, DNA replication and protein synthesis, that we will practice again the following Tuesday. I will not cover organelles in class. I'm hoping that at some point in your high school or college career, you've talked about organelles. There's two pages of organelles in your course pack that you can read through. I'll be happy to help you if you have any questions on those. But I'm hoping that we can spend time on something that probably demands more of our attention, and that's the DNA replication and protein synthesis on Thursday. If you find the organic compounds to not stick, and that's not unusual because it is dry stuff, I would encourage you to try some flashcards. If you do a flashcard, you may want to put on there the building block or monomer for each category. You may want to stick on there the structure. We're going to talk about unique structures for each category. Any functions we talk about and specific examples. So that may help you to get this stuff to stick, in practicing it. I know this is Labor Day weekend and you may have plans. If you don't have plans, or if you have an opportunity to take some flashcards with you wherever you're at this weekend, I would go ahead and start studying for test number one because it's coming up soon. And if you start now, you'll have an opportunity to get this material to really stick. I just want to remind you, I'm at the end of the hallway. If you head out this door and go straight down, I'm the door at the very end of the hall. Y'all are welcome to come see me. Come, let's talk through material if you're stuck anywhere. The test is next Thursday. It would help if I plugged in the little remote thing, wouldn't it? Push my button, nothing happens. There we go. Okay, so test one next Thursday is that little bit on homeostasis. Hopefully today's review helped. Chapter two is chemistry. We're going to wrap that up today. And chapter three is, of course, cell info. It is 60 multiple choice and three essays. You guys get the option to pick the ones you want to answer. There are higher valued questions at 5 points that may require a little more involved of an answer. And then there's easier ones with 3-point value that you may not have to provide as much info to. So looking at the old test, and I know a lot of you have already printed those old tests off, D2L is a really fantastic way to study. If you want to answer the essay questions and have me look at your answers, I'll be happy to do that, at least to kind of get you into the gear of thinking about how to address those come test time. If you know you're going to be absent next Thursday, let me know. I'll be happy to set up a test so you can take the test ahead of time. Otherwise, if absent on test day, we automatically replace one lowest or one missed exam score with the final exam. So I know sometimes you can't plan for an absence. Sometimes you wake up and it's just not happening that day, sick or otherwise. So if you do miss, just know that I won't put a zero in except as a placeholder to be replaced by that final come December. Do y'all have questions at this point about test number one?
It'll be in here, right?
It'll be in here. Yeah, all y'all need to bring is pencils. The whole class period. And if you want to start early, if you've got the jitterbugs and you want to get your nervous energy out, come on. In fact, if I'm not in here and you want to start early, just come get me down the hall. I'll be happy to get you started early. I know that you have lab afterwards, and I know we can't really stay past 10:45 because another group comes in here. So if you want to start 9 or 9:15, come get me. I'll get you started. Okay, so why don't we actually start from the beginning? I know we covered carbs on Thursday of last week, but it's worth hearing again, so I thought I'd start you back at the top of page 19. So organic compounds differ from inorganic compounds because they contain atoms, especially carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen, sometimes in an abundant amount of those atoms. And we also find nitrogen, what is P?
Phosphorus.
And S?
Sulfur.
These are hallmark or classic atoms that you're going to find in organic compounds. All right, so we typically won't find carbons in abundance in an inorganic molecule. So acids or bases or electrolytes typically don't have an abundance of carbon, but organic molecules do have a lot of carbon. We make a lot of these organic compounds that we're going to discuss. We certainly use them, and a lot of these are covalently bonded together. So some of these molecules that we discuss today are going to be pretty large molecules. We call them macromolecules when they're pretty big. Everybody get a chance to sign the attendance roster today. Y'all good? Okay. All right, anybody still need this slide? So I didn't talk about this slide on Thursday, but it's a great time for us to review. What your body does with organic molecules is it brings in food through, you know, eating processes. We actually break down that food through catabolic processes. And then our body distributes those building blocks or monomers to various cells. And those cells, in turn, will build those molecules into larger macromolecules. So anabolic processes build new tissues, new cells, perhaps muscle. Other things that your body may need are built through anabolic processes. But the way you get those molecules to work with is through taking your food and breaking it down through a catabolic process. Okay, so catabolism is also the same as a decomposition reaction. Anabolism is the same thing as what other type of reaction? Dehydration, synthesis, yeah. So building reactions or synthesis reactions make new molecules or tissues or cells in our bodies. Some of the breakdown process actually releases energy for us, so we do use that ATP to run our bodily processes, and also a byproduct of that breakdown is heat. And so if your processes run at a certain speed, your body temperature tends to fall somewhere between 97 and 99 degrees Fahrenheit. So that kind of reaction where you release energy, is that endergonic or exergonic? Exergonic, yes. Yeah. So those releasing energy processes, those are exergonic in nature. You may read food labels when you go to the grocery store when you're picking products. And there's actually one of our organic compounds missing from this food label. Which one?
Fats. Oh, no, that's lipids.
Yep. Nucleic acids, yeah. So interesting that we've got carbs, proteins, and fats on here, but we don't have nucleic acids. And we really don't consider them an essential thing that we have to eat, but any living organism that you consume, whether it's animal products or plant products, you're gonna get those nucleic acids. So they don't include them on here, but yeah, you're gonna get corn DNA into your body and cow DNA and chicken DNA. So it all comes in to make our own DNA and RNA. Kind of an interesting thought there that you are what you eat, right?
Mm-hmm. No wonder I can't lose weight on my car.
I mean, it's kind of cool to think about, you know, oh, everything that you eat, you're getting the DNA from that organism or that RNA, those molecules in their building form. All right, so carbs, we talked about these on Thursday. What does the word monomer mean? One, and kind of, it's a building block, it's a single unit. Monosaccharide, hey, there's one again. What is saccharide?
Sugar.
Good. And the building block for a lot of our carbs, in fact, is a very common sugar called glucose. Depending on the type of carb you've got, they're either gonna give you a very quick burst of energy or a longer burn of energy. Looking at our three types down below, which one is gonna give you the very quickest burst of energy? Monosaccharides, good. And if you want a much longer burn of energy, di or poly, that's right. So I make the point because if if you're feeling kind of in a slump in the afternoon, what do people reach for to eat or drink around 2, 3, 4 o'clock? Everybody said Mountain Dew, right?
Candy.
Candy. And of course, you might feel a quick pick-me-up, right? Because Mountain Dew or soft drinks or candy probably have a lot of mono and disaccharides. If you want something that gives you a longer burn, maybe takes you until dinner, maybe dinner's late at 8 or 9 o'clock that night, if you want to last from 3 p.m. to 8 or 9 p.m., your meal should contain what? Polysaccharides, meaning what?
Complex
carbs.
Not as tasty.
Not as tasty. But they keep you from being hungry and eating more, right? So polysaccharides is going to be your better bet for a longer burn of energy. So if we're thinking about taking a sprint versus a marathon, if you're a sprinter, monosaccharide burns off quickly. Marathon runners need a complex carb because you don't want to go kaput halfway through your race, right? So like I mentioned, a very common sugar is glucose. It is sweet tasting. Glucose is considered a monosaccharide because it has very few carbon atoms. How many carbon atoms does a molecule need to qualify as a monosaccharide?
Three, two, seven.
So how many does glucose have? Glucose has six. Does it fit the bill for a monosaccharide? It does. So monosaccharides, being simple sugars, have either, you know, 3 up to 7 carbon atoms. Because glucose has 6, yeah, it fits the bill. This is ring structure for glucose. I know we're not used to looking at this ring structure, but you probably recognize a lot of what you see. You'll notice carbon atoms here represented by C, oxygens and hydrogens, and you see these single bonds. Most of these are single bonds. How do you know they're single?
One line.
Are they covalent or ionic in nature? They're covalent, yeah, they're sharing. Because anytime that line is there, it means we're sharing a pair of electrons. We haven't done the transfer. The transfer never shows us a line, but that line there tells me that I'm sharing at least a pair of electrons. Okay, so this one here, this double line, is a double covalent. And how many pairs of electrons are being shared? Two pairs, right? A little bit of a stronger bond. You know, if you wanted to look at it drawn out in a line, that's glucose in a line. That's more like what we've been looking at. But in reality, it comes together in a circle shape. We call this like a ring shape. And so that's, in fact, how glucose tends to exist. Glucose is your body's preferred fuel. It helps our mitochondria make what energy molecule? ATP. Good. We talked on Thursday about some isomers of glucose. These isomers have the same what? Same chemical formula. And notice it's C6H12O6. By the way, that qualifies it as a carb because carbs have a generic formula of CH2O, meaning twice the hydrogens as carbon and oxygen. So you'll notice that glucose and galactose look, excuse me, really similar. Only difference here is we've flip-flopped our hydrogen and oxygen. There we go, on the left-hand side. But that's enough for your body to know the difference. So even though they look very similar, they're in fact structurally different, and so we consider them to be isomers of each other. Does your body know the difference? Yes. Your body says, I prefer glucose to make my ATP, not galactose, even though it's the same formula. Fructose is another monosaccharide with the same chemical formula. It too is an isomer of glucose. And once again, your body knows the difference. So all that high fructose corn syrup and products that are sold, you know, your body says, I'd really prefer to have the glucose to make my ATP. All right, so these are all isomers. What do they have in common?
Formula.
Yep. What makes them different?
Structure.
their structure, good. Hey, just a heads up, isomers and isotopes are two different things, right? Okay, so what are isotopes? Isotopes, yeah. Atoms of the same element, but different numbers of
neutrons.
Yeah. So different story, right? Isotopes are atoms of the same element, differing numbers of neutrons. By contrast, these are isomers. They have the same chemical formula, just different structures, right? So in talking about disaccharides, how many sugar molecules should I expect to see linked together?
Two.
Good. And the way we bond molecules together is at an anabolic reaction or a catabolic reaction. Anabolic, good. You know how I remember it? You ever heard of anabolic steroids? Anabolic steroids bulk up your body. They build muscle. And I keep in mind that anabolic means to build. So that's just my little mental trick to say, okay, if I'm building something, it must be an anabolic reaction. So this reaction here between glucose and another glucose forms a disaccharide called maltose. This is common in foods. Pick up pretty much any cracker box or food box at the grocery store. You'll probably find maltose in there. And if you think you're getting a complex carb, unfortunately, maltose is not. It's a disaccharide with those two molecules of glucose. Sucrose is another disaccharide. How many sugars does it contain? It's two, yeah, glucose and fructose. And so
on the quiz, we have to know sucrose contains glucose and fructose.
That's what I would do, yeah. I'd put on there that glucose, fructose, galactose are monosaccharides. I would know that maltose and sucrose are di and what makes them up, yeah. So let me give you an example where this may come into play. Some people have dietary issues. There's a condition called fructosemia where people cannot consume fructose. Well, is maltose okay for them to consume?
Yes.
Yeah, because the components there are just two glucoses. But is sucrose okay for them to consume? It is not. It contains fructose, right? So, you know, that's why it's important to know some of the components here, because we have dietary issues that may arise from people that can't consume one or both of these sugar types. Let's talk about the complex carbs. They are polysaccharides. There's three of them listed at the bottom of your page. Which one is an animal polysaccharide?
Glycogen.
Glycogen, good. What are the components of glycogen? Fructose or glucose?
Glucose.
Glucose. Okay. And where do we store glycogen?
Liver.
In the liver. Good. And so if you've got a lot of Krispy Kreme donuts floating in your bloodstream and that blood sugar is high, insulin takes glucose to your cells so that it gives you a sugar high, and it also stores your extra glucose in your liver as glycogen. So insulin actually removes the blood sugar and puts it in these storage compartments like your cells and your liver. So if you need glucose, like if you have not yet eaten today, then you may be operating off of your storage supplies of glycogen. So glycogen is found in your liver and somewhat in your muscles. When your body breaks down glycogen, is that breakdown process catabolic or anabolic?
Catabolic.
And what molecule do you get if you break apart these glycogens? Glucose, right. So in turn, you can raise your blood sugar by breaking apart your glycogen. So, you know, your body gives you about a 3-day grace period. If you've had a binge on some Krispy Kremes, you've got about 3 days to remove your stored glycogen from your liver and break it back down into glucose. Otherwise, after 3 days, what happens to that glycogen? Fat. Yep, stores as fat. Starch is not an animal polysaccharide. Where do you get starch from?
Plants.
Plants. What's the building block here? glucose. So plants don't get fat, lucky plants. Plants simply store all their excess sugar as starch. So what kind of plants are great sources of starch?
Taters,
yes. Yeah, pastas, rice, grains like wheat, potatoes. A lot of these foods are white in color. They're great sources of starch. The bad news is when you get starch into your body and you don't break down all the molecules, you'll store what you can as glycogen, and then later it turns into fat. So they have this, what, freshman 15, when people move away from home and live in college. It's freshman 30, freshman 45, right? It never leaves you. So a lot of dorms and cafeterias serve a lot of starchy foods, make you feel comforted in the home, you know, right? But that stuff is hard to break down. It's hard to burn off all the molecules of glucose here. Better choice for not gaining weight is cellulose. What is cellulose built from? Plant glucose. Yeah, glucose again. But the way that the molecules here are arranged, you actually can't break down cellulose. So it passes through your body completely undigested. It's called roughage or fiber for that reason. So this is good news in terms of not gaining weight from cellulose. So stringy green vegetables, lettuce, spinach, kale, you know, the strings in green beans, the strings in celery have some cellulose in there. String bean, yeah. Not very tasty, not very satisfying, right? How about questions on this page?
You said cellulose.
It's got glucose. It's just arranged in such a way that we can't break it down. Yeah, we don't have the enzyme for it, but we can break down starch.
But both the starch and cellulose are how plants store their glucose.
Right, right. If they want the glucose for later, most likely starch is going to be the way they go.
Like roots.
Like roots, yeah, like potatoes, yeah. This slide here is actually something that would be a great flashcard. It's just the need-to-know basics. Lipids are, in fact, fats. Monomer is the building block, and there's two things here, two components here. A fatty acid chain and a glycerol head. We sometimes combine the two and call them triglycerides. We combine the fatty acid and the glycerol when we talk, and we sometimes say the building block is a triglyceride. So we're not going to talk about the eicosanoids, this middle word down here, but we will talk about the other four in this list. So there's a lot of things in your body that are fat-based, which we oftentimes don't think about. Eicosanoids and leukotrienes are involved in like immune response reactions, so we're not going to discuss those in here. Normally, when you hear the word fat, you think about energy storage. Fats get a bad reputation. We do need them in our bodies. They help to insulate our organs. Females without enough fat will not have a menstrual cycle. I don't know, that sounds like a pretty good plan there. But you know, if a female's really athletic and she has like, I think it's something like 5% or less body fat, it's not enough, so her body just shuts off her menstrual cycle and she will not have it again until she gains enough fat back to regulate that menstrual cycle. So very athletic females oftentimes will have a sketchy menstrual cycle that comes and goes and it's not, you know, routine. So we oftentimes don't give credit to where and how and why those fats are really so important for our bodies. Just checking to see if anybody still needs this slide. Yeah, Y'all good?
You said we're not going to talk about the
EI. Yeah, that one we're not going to talk about. So you can just leave it off your list. Okay, so keep in mind the building block for a fat is actually two components, a fatty acid and a glycerol. I'd like to show you what a fatty acid and a glycerol look like. The two components of a building block for a fat are a fatty acid and a glycerol. So I'd like to show you what those look like. You know, when we started this content a few minutes ago, the reminder was organic compounds have lots of carbon, hydrogens, oxygens. I think this picture does a great job in conveying that message. Lots of carbons here. In fact, they form these long chains of carbons. Hydrogens and oxygens are commonly found here as well. The left portion of this picture shows a glycerol head. The right portion of this picture shows a fatty acid chain. So when we say the glycerol head is polar in nature, polar, what does that word mean?
Cold.
It's got a charge, and are we sharing or transferring? Sharing. Yeah, somebody's a hog here, right? And so even though they didn't put the delta symbols on that formula over there, there is in fact an uneven or unequal sharing of electrons in that glycerol head. Okay, so what that means is we know that water tends to be polar. The glycerol head of a fat tends to be polar. Polar molecules love each other. So the head portion of a fat loves water. And the word for that is hydrophilic. Literally, it's water love. When we talk about fats, the heads are boring, so we don't oftentimes spend a lot of conversation on those, but we will spend time talking about the fatty acid chains. The fatty acid chains tend to have lots of carbons. Oftentimes there's lots of hydrogens, but because the sharing here is equal and fair, it is nonpolar in nature. And since it's nonpolar, it is a hydrophobic portion of our fat. What does hydrophobic mean? Doesn't like water. So like I said, the heads are boring. We're going to leave them alone for just a minute. Let's instead focus on those fatty acid chains. On your worksheet, there's two types of fatty acid chains. They can be considered saturated or unsaturated. So what I see is a lot of carbons. And what do those lines drawn to the carbons tell us?
They're single bonds.
They're single bonds. And if you'll notice on my saturated chain, every carbon, ignore the stuff in red, right? Don't worry about that. But starting right here, every carbon has hydrogens bound to it. In fact, there's no room for any more hydrogens. There are so many hydrogens, we say this is a saturated chain. It's maxed out. It holds as many hydrogens as it can possibly hold. This is bad news, because if you eat a saturated fatty acid chain, that's power-packed with energy, right? In order for you to break that down, you've got a lot of atoms there to break apart. So what kinds of foods fall into this category?
Butter.
The
oil.
Solids. So
Crisco.
Yeah, stuff that tastes good, that is bad for us, and that includes lard, butter, Criscos. Anything that's solid at room temperature is quite likely a saturated fat. So you can take butter out, sit it on your counter, come back a day later, it's still solid. Right? Maybe rancid, but it's going to be solid. By contrast, what is different about this fatty acid chain that is unsaturated in nature? It's got
a maximum of hydrogen.
Yeah, you don't have the max number of hydrogens, and you've got empty spots on the carbons. So there's hydrogens missing here. There's a double bond where you're missing those hydrogens. And you know why? It's all about stabilizing what? Valence shell, yeah. So anytime you're missing hydrogens, your carbons say, but my orbital's not complete. What should I do? Well, the carbons end up sharing two pairs of electrons, and that helps to make their valence shells stable. So it's a way for them to cope. Now, notice what happens to the chain where you've got a double bond. Is it straight? It kinks, right? So unsaturated fats have kinks in them, or bends, every time you have what kind of bond? Every time you've got a double bond. Why do you think an unsaturated fat's healthier?
You can break it down. Right?
You can break it down a little easier, right? There's less what stored there. Less hydrogens, yeah. So unsaturated fats are things like oils, canola, vegetable oil, any of the oils that you find on the grocery store aisle together, they're liquids. Okay, so the more liquid oil you've got, the better off it is, the less power or energy that it stores in the molecule chains.
Is that why they call that hydrogenated fat?
Yes. So you bring up an interesting point. Years ago, places like Burger King and KFC, all the fast food restaurants, used to have hydrogenated fats in their foods, and they said this was making people sick. And what they were doing is they were taking oils like this, and they were popping hydrogens on every place they were missing, and they became saturated. So what's the bad news there? Harder to break down, right. Do you know why these fast food restaurants did this?
Tasty.
Tasty. And if you're cooking, you can leave that saturated fat out, and it stays longer on your shelves without going bad. So for them, it was their bottom line. It was their dollars. So nowadays they say, yeah, stay away from those hydrogenated fats, trans fats. I know this is labeled. That cheats for us a little bit, right? But how do you know this is an unsaturated set of three fatty acid chains? You're missing hydrogens, right? And what's the second clue?
Double bonds.
Yeah, so this is an unsaturated fat. Would you expect it to be a solid or a liquid at room temperature? It's a liquid, right? Better for us because there's less hydrogen stored in those fatty acid chains. I know, again, this is labeled, but just for comparison, here's a saturated fat. Notice there's no double bonds in your fatty acid chains. And what are we maxed out with? Hydrogens, yeah. That chain there is full of hydrogens. So if you're thinking about good unsaturated fats, they're typically oils. Sometimes nuts have unsaturated fats that are good for us. Avocado has some unsaturated fats. The bad stuff is the stuff that we prefer to eat. You know, red meat has saturated fat. A lot of things like dairy, cheeses and ice creams, butter, those kinds of things often have saturated fats that are more likely to cause us to have vessel problems as we get older.
So not all unsaturated fats are liquid.
We can say most of them are. If in terms of what you go to the grocery store and purchase, most saturateds are solid, but that's not a hard and fast rule. Because avocado sits over there on the liquid side.
Yeah.
So most are liquid on unsaturated, most are solid on the saturated side. I think it's a mixture of both, if I remember correctly. Because it's liquid at room temp, but I think it has quite a few saturated fats in it. Which, in fact, even canola oil still has saturated fat, even though it's liquid. These are three types of fatty acid chains. Ignore the glycerol head, it's orange up top. Instead, focus on the fatty acid chain. I know you can't see the details very well here, but you can see the kink or bend in the chains. This one, steric on the far left, no double bonds, right? Saturated, good. This one has one kink or bend. It is a monounsaturated. And multiple double bonds means
polyunsaturated.
Health-wise, which one would you pick to eat?
The polyunsaturated.
Why pick the polyunsaturated? Easier to break down, right. Less hydrogen stored on the fatty acid chain. That means less work your body has to do to break it down. The least healthy is which one? Stearic. It's full, it's maxed out, it is saturated with hydrogens. Would you be able to do this come test time?
Tell you which is which.
Tell me which one's saturated. Yeah, saturated is easy. It's straight. There's no bends or kinks to the chain, no double bonds. How do you know this one's polyunsaturated on the far right? A lot of kinks, a lot of double bonds, right. So mono is only one bend or a double bond. Poly is multiple double bonds there. Here's another example. Look at the fatty acid chain here. This is the glycerol head. Ignore that. Saturated or unsaturated?
Saturated.
How do you know? No kinks, no double bonds, right? Okay, so this one is just one glycerol head and one fatty acid chain. It's called a monoglyceride. That makes sense, right? One chain, one head, monoglyceride. I guarantee you next time you're in the grocery store, you're going to be reading those food labels and, oh, this one's better, right? This one's better, even though it's saturated, than this one. This one has how many fatty acid chains?
Two.
Two. They're circled here in red. Blue is in, that's a glycerol head. You just doubled the amount of storage. That's really bad, right? Diglycerides. That monoglyceride, even though it is saturated fatty acid chain, is still looking better than this. This is a triglyceride. It's one head, three saturated fatty acid chains. And if you have your blood tested and they say your triglycerides are high, it probably means you've got extra fat circulating in your bloodstream. So that's not a good sign for your blood vessels and for cardio. What's that?
Too many Oreos.
Too many Oreos, yeah. Cut the sugar out and that'll cut out the triglycerides. This can also be an indicator of diabetes if somebody has high triglycerides because it means the sugar's not being regulated properly. All right. Did you get your blank there on page 20 for polyunsaturated fats? If monos have one double bond, polys have many. Polys have many. On the top of page 21, let me make sure you've got those blanks. We talked about monoglycerides being one head and one chain or tail, one and one. Diglycerides have one glycerol head and
two
fatty acid chains. Good. Triglycerides have how many chains?
Three.
I think phospholipids are cute. They look like a little dancer. They've got a head and two fatty acid chains. So technically, they're kind of like a diglyceride. You know, they've got that similar setup. But if you look closely, we're going to ignore the head for just a moment. Let's pick on those two chains. One of them is straight. That means that straight chain is saturated. There is a single bend or kink in that other chain. And where there's a bend, what kind of bond? Double bond, sitting right there. So these phospholipids have a saturated chain and a monounsaturated chain. The heads are polar. Guess what the tails are? Nonpolar. So if the heads are polar, how do they feel about water? They like water. So the heads are polar, they like water. The tails are nonpolar, they hate water. So kind of a funny setup here. You've got a head and two fatty acid chains that have different beliefs, right? One loves water, the other portion hates water. So when you put these phospholipids in their natural environment, like your cell membranes, they will orient themselves so the tails can hang out together. So you'll notice this looks like a sea of eggs or a sea of golf balls. These are the polar heads pointed out toward your body's cells and fluids. Notice down here inside the cell, there's yet another layer of those heads. Look closely inside, you see those tails pointed toward each other. So the haters are on the inside, right? Those heads are oriented out toward water, but the tails that hate water are oriented toward this inner portion of your plasma membrane. So in fact, your plasma membrane is somewhat fluid. These phospholipids can float around and they're dynamic. You can move these proteins around in through them. You can move these cholesterols around, but those phospholipids will always orient so that the heads are out and the tails make up the inside. So we will actually talk about them a little later, probably on Thursday. We're going to skip those. Let's talk about steroids. Okay, so everything we've talked about so far is thrown out the window when you talk about steroids. Do you see a glycerol head or fatty acid chains here? I don't see any head, no chains, right? This is a funky looking setup. This has no appearance like we've seen before. But steroids in some textbooks are put into their own special separate category because they're so different. The textbook we use, the Ammerman textbook, actually includes them as part of the lipids, so we'll talk about them there. What you're looking at are rings of carbon atoms. And how many rings do you see in total? Yeah, there's a ring, there's one, there's two, there's three and four, almost the fifth one, didn't we? And at every point there's a bend, there's a carbon atom sitting at every bend. Chemists get tired of drawing carbon atoms. They say, let's just leave them off so they don't actually put carbon at every point there's a bend. But nonetheless, there's some similarities here that put them in this lipid category. One of our best known types of steroids is cholesterol. Cholesterol is made by your body. You can also get it from foods that you eat. And cholesterol is also the basis for our sex hormones. In males, testosterone is a steroid. In females, estrogens and progesterones, those are female sex hormones. All right, so steroids, a little different in their structure. There's no fatty acid chains, no heads here. Instead, the thing to look for are four fused rings. You'll learn a lot about steroids come Bio 211. How about questions so far?
You said the thing to look for is the four rings.
Four rings, yeah. There's one, there's our second, our third, and our fourth. We got about 5 minutes left, or about 4 minutes. Let's see what we can do with page 22. Cholesterol, it's actually the basis for our sex hormones. We do make a lot of it in our body. About 85% of your cholesterol is made. About 15% you actually get from foods that you eat, typically animal product foods. So what that means is if you diet, you don't really make a big influence on how much cholesterol you have. It mostly comes from what your body makes. Let's start a little bit on proteins. This is another good flashcard slide. The building block or monomer is called the amino acid. Like we've been seeing so far, we have carbon, hydrogen, oxygen, nitrogen, some phosphorus and sulfur here. So it should start to look like a rerun. Proteins provide structure for our bodies. They do very important roles such as hormones and enzymes. We will talk about them throughout this course and 211. They're certainly a very important part of the way your body is structured, and they also play very important functional roles as well. So instead of getting into the nitty-gritty details here on page 22, why don't we just come back to functions on Thursday. I'm going to finish up a little bit here, proteins, enzymes, and nucleic acids. You'll want to look ahead at that. And then on Thursday, we're going to start with cells, so you may want to read ahead on cell structure and components. That'll start us out in chapter 3. All right. Y'all have a good one. I will see you on Thursday.